possible.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's been quite a while, really, since we've been able to delve into Yadaya. We're in the Haya chapter, which is the existence chapter of Yadaya, trying to go through the material that helps us understand the creation account. But I think it's been almost a week and a half since we've been able to dive back into it because of callers in the second hours. And anytime we have a caller, we will respond to questions and engage in dialogue. It's a strong preference, so that's not a complaint. It's just a statement of a fact. After reading the first couple of statements that Yahweh made in his Torah regarding creation, we turn to the 90th Psalm because it presented some information, some insights, a perspective on creation that was helpful. Also interesting that the very person who Yahweh told about how he and when he and why he created the spiritual and material realm is Moshe, and it is Moshe who scribed the 90th Psalm, one of the few psalms actually attributed to Moshe, the very man who scribed the Torah. So his insights on the creation account, as it's presented in the opening lines of Bereshith, which means in the beginning, are interesting to us, enlightening to us. So that we get back into the context and the flow of the 90th Psalm, it began with a request of Moshe. Moshe means to draw out, a man that draws us away from that which was represented by the crucible of Egypt. The crucible of Egypt represents human oppression through the human institutions of religion and politics, through military and economic schemes. Moshe is the one whose Torah draws us away from such things, guides us away from such things. So, a request of Moshe, a man of Elohim, of the Mighty One, of God. He says, Yahweh, he writes his name, Yahweh, Yod He Wah He, Yahweh. You are, you have been, and you will be, Haya. In Hebrew, verbs exist throughout time. There is no such thing as past, present, or future tense in Hebrew. Every Hebrew verb is true throughout time, not stuck in time. You know, we review and consider in English concepts of past, present, and future in our use of verbs. Well, in Hebrew, there is no such restriction. And the reason there is no such restriction is in Hebrew, the very testimony of Yahweh, particularly his Torah teaching, he says represents him. Just as Yahusha represents Yahweh, so does his Torah teaching. The Torah, light, and Yahusha, as well as the set-apart spirit, are all manifestations that help us understand, help us come to know Yahweh as he is. And since God is infinite in time, so is the language that he used to reveal himself to us. So Haya means, Yahweh, you have always existed, you will always exist, you are the very embodiment of existence. And you will be associated with our dwelling place, our makum, our provision, the place where we stand. And this word, makum, it's based upon the Hebrew word kum, which means to stand upright. God wants us to stand side by side with him. He wants us to walk with him. Even his very name, Yod, Hey, Wah, Hey, as it was depicted in the graphic alphabet of Hebrew, the first language ever to materialize using an actual alphabet. What you see is the Yod is a arm that's reaching down and then out with an open hand. And then two people standing beside a tent peg. Both people are standing up. They're looking up. They're reaching up to be lifted up by Yah's hand. The tent peg that is between them is symbolic of securing a home and enlarging the home, and also of addition, of increasing, making those individuals greater, helping them grow. All concepts associated with family. And so it is Yah who wants us to stand with him. So he says, you have always been, you will always be, you are our dwelling place, the place where we are able to stand with you. Throughout all periods of time and generations of life, it ends with door, door. Door, door, when you repeat a word in Hebrew, it takes that word to an exponential strength, which means that this is not only all periods of time, it's not only all generations, it's for every household, for every family, it's for every place, and for all people who are related by birth. It's for everyone. God does not change his mind. There is no Old Testament and a New Testament that are different. He didn't originally come up with a plan that would enable us to be in his presence, standing upright in his presence, and then come up with a plan that would have us bow down to him, as religions dictate. There is but one covenant. There is but one God. He has but one testimony, and it is wholly consistent. This statement written by Moshe, but inspired by Yahweh, continues. It says, before the mountains were born, before the mountains were conceived, you brought forth them. You brought them forth through trembling and twisting of the land, creating the earth as we know it, the Tabel, this planet in word. World. Tabel is the, when God wants to speak of the entire planet, of the planet Earth, he uses the Hebrew word Tabel, typically the Hebrew word Eretz, which is primarily means land. It means that which comes out of really the essence of the soil. That which is a region is Eretz. Tabel would be the entire world. He says, that's how you brought it forth, through trembling and twisting. You know, this is speaking of the tectonic plates and of earthquakes and of violent asteroid impacts and of volcanoes and all of the kind of shaking and violent tumult that was initially present as our planet was being formed. And then he says, even before time, Ad Olam, you always existed as God. The reason that is interesting to us is because there was a time before time. Now, that's very hard for us to wrap our minds around, but there was a time before time. Time did not flow. Time did not even exist. There was no notion of a flow of time before Yahweh took some of his energy and organized that energy into matter. Prior to Yahweh taking some of his energy and organizing it into matter, in the Big Bang that created the physical universe, time simply was. It did not flow. There was a time. Before God created the universe, the physical universe, transferring energy into matter, he existed, but time did not. There was a time before time. A profound insight. This then continues in the third statement. He says, you return and you restore mortal humankind. Sub is a very important Hebrew term, the one that's been translated here, return and restore. It means to renew, to transform. So you return and restore mortal humankind, Enosh. Our souls are mortal. Yah makes it very clear, as we will discover as we make our way through Bereshith, which has been misnamed Genesis, that human souls are no different than animal souls, and that they are mortal. That all animals have a consciousness, which is their soul, an awareness of their environment. And we are mortal. Until we either associate with God's spirit or with the spirit of demons, Hasatan's spirit, we're mortal. When we associate with Yah's spirit and we're born anew on Bukurim, following Pesach and Matzah, as a result of embracing the terms and conditions of the covenant and are adopted into God's family. In that way, we can become immortal. And so can we become immortal by associating ourselves with Hasatan, with the adversary, with Halal bin Shakar. Although, in that way, one becomes immortal, living and existing throughout time, but separated from God in the lightless place that would be akin to a black hole. So you return and you restore, you transform mortal humankind, Enosh, forever, Ad, for all eternity, as part of your witness, from being crushed, from being diminished, and being destroyed. Christianity and Islam both teach that all souls either go to heaven or hell. That is not God's testimony. In fact, a God who would say, love me or I will see to it that you are tortured in hell, would not be lovable. Such God would be sadistic. All thinking atheists know that. All thinking agnostics know that. That the depiction of God in Christianity and Islam, if their God were true, that God would not be lovable. He would be sadistic. No loving God could say, love me or I'm going to see to it that you're tortured in hell forever. That's not Yah's position. God is not involved in hell in any way. Sheol is just a place of separation from him. It is indeed a punishment, but only a punishment in the sense that there will be emotional and mental anguish associated with spending the rest of one's eternity in a place that is separated from God, but is not separated from the co-conspirators who promoted the myths associated with religion and politics. If you think Obama is a swell guy, if you love the Pope, you'll love hell. For you, it won't be a punishment. You love your pastor or priest, you'll spend eternity with them if you promote your religion along with them. Now, you don't end up there by being the victim of a religion. You only end up there by being the promoter of a religion or of a political scheme. The vast majority of mortal human souls, of Enosh, of mortals, simply cease to exist. And so what this is saying is that God forever restores and returns and transforms those souls so that they are not diminished and destroyed. Because that is the consequence of being beguiled by religion. At the end of your mortal existence, there is no reward, there is no penalty. Your soul simply ceases to exist. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. More in a moment. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. I encourage you to call us should you have any questions or just want to engage in this discussion, 877-300-7645. All right, so the third statement that is was scribed by Moshe, the scribe of the Torah, says, you return and restore, you transform, sub, mortal humankind, Enosh, forever, Ad, from being crushed, from being diminished and destroyed. And Ad is based upon a Hebrew term that whose root means by way of your witness. So you return and restore mortal humankind forever by way of your eternal witness from being crushed, diminished, and destroyed, ceasing to exist. And that's what happens to the vast preponderance of human souls. You know, God gave us all three gifts. Mortal life, he gave us free will, and he gave us a conscience, a nesalma, for us to make intelligent, reasonable, and rational decisions based upon that which we observe. If you observe his Torah teaching and you embrace his covenant as a result, then you get to live with him forever. He'll restore you. If you don't, if you just kind of go with the flow of humanity and you embrace man's religious and political dogmas, he's calling you to return. He's calling you to change. But if you ignore him, you will simply cease to exist. But if you're one of the deceivers, if you are a Romney or an Obama, if you are a pope or a pastor or priest and you're leading an imam and you are engaged leading people away from God, then there is a consequence for that, just as any loving father would make certain that those who abuse his children will be accountable, to be accountable for misleading and abusing God's children, his creation, is to be incarcerated in what is essentially a black hole, a lightless place forever. And then speaking of Yahweh, Moshe repeats a line that is just so stunningly important. So here he has made a statement of fact. He said, you return and you restore mortal humankind forever by way of your eternal witness from being destroyed. And then he explains the way. He said, you say to us, return, be changed and be restored, sub again, turn around, walk in the opposite direction, stop walking with the flow, stop going along with religion and politics and patriotism and militarism, turn the opposite direction, return, come back home. He says, children, men, sons and offspring, the descendants from Bana, meaning those who build a home and family, those who were restored and established. You, the children of Adam. Now, there's lots of Hebrew words for man. Enosh is mortal humankind. Now this ends by saying sons of Adam. What was unique about Adam is that he existed for a period of time, and since time was of no consequence then because he was conceived perfect and thus immortal, Adam existed camping out with God in the garden of great joy, Gan Eden, the protective enclosure of joy. And so he and God had a perfect relationship. They enjoyed the covenant and all of its benefits. They explored together, they talked together, they walked together, they lived together. God wants us to return to that perfect condition. The whole path to God that begins with Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Passover, unleavened bread and first fruits, seven Shabbat and Teruah, and then concludes with reconciliations and Sukkah. Sukkah is about camping out with God. It means shelters. To be sheltered again in his garden of great joy, walking with him, exploring with him, talking with him, living with him. He wants us to return to him. He's inviting us to return to him. He's calling out to us to sub, to become then children who live in his home as Adam once did. Now, from this perspective that is giving us some insights into how to properly view his creation testimony. This is the payoff line from that perspective, although what I think we have learned up to this point may be even more powerful. He says, indeed, 1,000 years in your sight and from your perspective are like a day, the same as yesterday, when it passed by a perceptive observer in the night. We will return to how that applies to the creation account in just a moment. This is Shattering Myths. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're going to continue to consider Yah's testimony, particularly now as he spoke about providing us with a proper perspective to understand time. You know, time is one of those things that is difficult for the average person to understand. And I don't want to here suggest that I absolutely understand it. I can speak about it, but the whole concept of time is an extraordinarily difficult concept for us as we are stuck in time. It's very difficult for us to see time as a dimension. It is even more difficult for us to think that time is relative. But time is relative. Time does not always flow at the same pace, and sometimes time does not flow at all. Yes, Scott.
We talked about this. It's the whole thing where if you go shopping with your wife and you really don't want to go shopping with her, time seems to really drag on. I mean, for you, it's like you just spent 9 hours and it's only been three, but for her, it went by in 20 minutes, you know? This wasn't bad at all.
But if you're engaged playing golf or doing something with your buddy, where did the time go?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how did it go by that fast? That's not exactly what he's talking about here, but that is a good way of helping us have a perspective. What God is actually saying is what Einstein would later prove by way of a theorem. General and special relativity are based not just on the fact that energy and matter are the same thing, that they're equivalent, but not equal, that matter is a diminished form of energy, but that his overall understanding of the universe had time being a dimension. And what he said, and this is very difficult to get your mind around, but that time is essentially the universal light, is the universal constant. And so if you had a photon of light coming in one direction and another photon of light going in the opposite direction, you know, if you picture two trains and they're closing at each other, both going 100 miles an hour, but now you have these two photons of light and they're coming at each other and they're both traveling at the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles per second, that the closing speed is not like the train. You know, if the train, one's coming at 100 miles an hour, the other one on the same track is coming at 100 miles an hour, they're going to approach each other at a closing speed of 200 miles an hour. It's not the case with light. They will approach each other at the speed of light, not twice the speed of light, because time is relative to the observer. Nothing can move faster than the speed of light, and so it cannot intersect at twice the speed of light. So the very idea of time, what we have learned, we've known this from our spacecraft, even our orbiting satellites, is we have these GPS satellites. We have to adjust the clocks on our satellites because they orbit at great speeds around the Earth to accommodate for the speed that they're traveling, because time slows as they move faster. And they're not even going, you know, even 1% of the speed of light. But the faster we move, the more time slows. You know, if it were feasible and you were on a rocket traveling at the speed of light to a faraway galaxy and you were to return, well, you would not have aged even a day. Well, for you, the time to travel to that galaxy and to return, should you be traveling at the speed of light the entire way, there and back, for you, it would have seemed like this very second that you blasted off, the very second you would return. No time would transpire from your perspective. And yet the Earth would be 10 billion years old, older than it was when you left. That's the relative nature of time. And so what God is telling us here is that perspective is essential if you want to understand the flow of time. And that from our sight, looking backwards on time from our place on this planet, time moves, flows in a very different way than it does as it would from God's perspective at creation in the presence of great energy, matter, and velocity. So he's saying, indeed, 1,000 years in your sight and from your perspective are like a day. The same as yesterday, when it passed by a perceptive observer during the night. Time is relative. God is telling us that time is relative. He is introducing us to the very idea that Einstein would later prove. Now, why would he say that? To inspire Einstein? No. Because all of his testimony was written in such a way that if you didn't understand relativity, if you didn't understand the relative nature of time, which we didn't come to appreciate until about 50 years ago, you could still benefit from this. You could still say, you know, time is relative. It's not the same for God as it is for us. We have a different perspective on time. You didn't have to understand relativity to appreciate that. You didn't have to know that time slows on a photon of light so that it simply exists. So that this could teach, instruct, and guide people of all time and all ages, it was written in this way. Now, according to the psalm, perspective and presence are essential elements in the calibration of time. It is the same claim that Albert Einstein made in support of special and general relativity. Time moves differently relative to the observer and slows appreciably in the presence of great energy, mass, or velocity. But more than that, from our perspective and from our presence here on Earth as mortal men and women, one of our days is like 1,000 years from God's perspective. Therefore, if we extrapolate to the portrayal of prophetic history and the unfolding story of our salvation that are told in parallel throughout the creation account, each of the 7 days depicts 1,000-year period of human history where the story of our salvation is played out. This aspect of time is not relative. We can look at what is said in each of the 7 days and deduce how that testimony relates to the last 6,000 years of human history and to the story of our unfolding salvation. It is not random, but instead has been quantified. But as it relates to cosmological time, Bereshith, the book we have corrupted to Genesis, it gives readers several choices. Now, they can believe that the universe, our solar system, life, and man were created in 6 solar days, one of which occurred before the sun was created, 2 before the earth existed, and 3 before sunrises and sunsets were even visible on this planet because of the opaque nature of its atmosphere during the time of great earthquakes, asteroid impacts, and volcanoes. Now, that would be in complete disregard for all evidence to the contrary. Yet, according to recent surveys, most Americans believe the unbelievable. If you are one of them, you can visit the Creation Institute on the web, and you will find many like-minded folks. I didn't even use a pejorative there and say like-minded fools. Oh, I guess I did. The second option, at least for before Yahweh introduces to the concept of relativity, is to render the word yom as an imprecise period of time and not fret over the details. Because when he's talking about a day, he uses the Hebrew term yom. Yom really means just hot period. And you could just say, well, a yom is an indefinite period of time because there are occasions when Yah uses yom and it's not a 24-hour day. Sometimes it's just the illuminated part of a day, daytime. Sometimes it's the full day, as in day and night combined, sunset to sunset or sunrise to sunrise. Sometimes it's sunrise to sunset. So it could just be looked as, oh, that's an imprecise tool, and let's not sweat the details. But if that were your inclination, if you were just into, let's not worry about the details because the details are confusing, you wouldn't be listening to this program. You see, Yada Yah throughout, because Yahweh's testimony throughout, is absolutely focused on the details. God realizes that that's how we come to understand. If you want to really understand something, you have to come first to understand the details and then see how those details come together to form a fabric and how that fabric is woven into a cloth and into a garment. You want to understand the garment. Start with the thread. You want to understand the picture. Look at the colors and the shadings and come to know how these things collectively present the larger image. It's the same with any understanding. As we want to understand our physical world, we have to look at the components that make it up of molecules and atoms, of nucleuses, protons and electrons. And then we need to look beyond that at quarks and leptons. And as we look into the details, we come to understand that matter is nothing more than organized energy. That's how we come to understand. Now, the third option is that Bar-Rashid can be completely scrapped as a scientific explanation and be read exclusively for its spiritual insights. This is the Vatican's, Roman Catholicism's, most current view. The Church, which has a knack for always being wrong, recently issued a statement saying that the creation account wasn't accurate and that at best God played a distant fatherly role in our Genesis. Congratulations, Roman Catholicism. No matter the time, no matter the Pope, at least you're consistent. Always wrong. Now, I'm partial to the fourth option, which is viewing Yom as a precise quantitative measurement, as an accurate accounting, but relative to the presence and perspective of the eyewitness providing this testimony. Now, that is the course that we're going to chart throughout this presentation, because it provides the best fit between Yahweh's testimony, between revelation, between evidence, and also of reason. And so when we return, we're going to wrap up this perspective on time and return to the Genesis account. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To the final segment of Shattering Myths for today. We're talking about perspective and on time, particularly as time is presented from the perspective of the Creator. So within this framework of 6 plus 1 days that is presented by the only eyewitness at creation, of being equivalent to 1,000 years, the readers of Bar-Rashid cannot be consistent with the text and ignore the fact that the days of creation are prophetic. They speak of future history. They speak of the unfolding nature of God's promises relative to our salvation. They reveal the key aspects of human history, past, present, and future, from the fall of Adam to the fall of man, and then to the final millennial Shabbat. For this accounting, Psalm 90 is essential because it provides the scale that we should deploy. One day represents 1,000 years, not from the perspective of creation, but of human history. After all, he was talking about the sons of Adam, of Enosh, of mortal humankind. Nearly 6 millennia of human history have passed since man, Enosh, the sons of Adam, were expelled from the garden and began to record his existence in our world. In fact, the recorded human history goes back about that long a period of time. That's not to say that there weren't Homo sapiens well before 6,000 years ago. There were, but that's about the time of recorded history. Don't think it's a coincidence. So in this, God's word, science, and history all tell the same story. Well, now that we have our bearings, let's move on to the second half of the second statement that we find in Bar-Rashid. Picking up the relative cosmological timeline at the end of the first day, we are told that the Creator is spirit. Spirit. Now, that was a radical concept at its time. That was a time when idols were ubiquitous. You didn't think of God as spirit. You thought of him as the bull. You thought of him as the falcon. You thought of him as the eagle. He was the planet. He was the sun. He was the moon. Or she. Spirit. No. You know, cultures throughout ancient history all portrayed their gods as the sun, as the moon, as the planets, as the stars, in forms of animals and birds and the like. No. This God, the only real God, says, no. I'm not the planets. I'm not the sun. I'm not the moon. I'm not the stars. You ought not to depict me in the form of an eagle or a bull. No, don't do that. I'm spirit. And I'm going to explain spirit in the same way that you would understand light. That a spiritual existence is an energetic existence. It is akin to light. Where around light there is no darkness. Where around light's time is. It always exists. The past, the present, and future are simultaneous. They simply are. Light being the perfect form of energy, which then became the building block for matter. God says, I'm spirit. And that God set apart part of himself for a purpose. The Ruach spirit is introduced, purifying, cleansing, protecting, by hovering over God's creation, just as the set-apart spirit, our spiritual mother, does today for God's children. This is the role that the Ruach Kodesh, the set-apart spirit, plays in the lives of those who are saved. So in context, Yahweh began. In the beginning, Barashith, the Almighty, created and was alongside and closely associated with the spiritual realm, and also with the maternal realm, material realm, I should say. And the natural physical world existed as a formless, orderless, and empty void, obscured in darkness along with the presence of a great commotion, mysterious energy, a big bang. To which he added, the Almighty's Ruach, spirit, hovered over, ministered to, and cleansed according to the presence of the waters. So many wonderful insights there, particularly with the term the Almighty's Ruach spirit, which is a manifestation of God's feminine and maternal nature that we will return to at this time in our program tomorrow. May Yah bless you all.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a